Welcome to this week's episode of The Nero Show, your home of unfiltered cycling chat. In today's episode,
the cycling training pet peeves of a cycling coach.
Training content on YouTube. Is anyone actually getting fitter watching this stuff?
We have found the Asian Chris Miller, Oompa Loompa Cycling.
Flared handlebars, 2-hour bike ride nutrition, and Majin want me to sign a contract. Probably won't do it. All right, let's get into it. All right, no bikes today, Jesse. No bikes and no likes. That's the rule for today's episode, all right? You're a coach, supposedly. Have you got any training chat for us?
What an intro.
There's your intro, supposedly, allegedly. training chat. We haven't really deviled into any of this sort of stuff.
I know, so we've held off, yeah.
Is there anything coming across the desk at the moment that we can kind of nut out, maybe?
I got little tidbits that we can get through. Stuff that's been bugging me and you get to all hear me. First one, cramping.
Mm.
The way people talk about cramping does my head in.
Right.
Something on the lines of, I was in a race and I was going to do 300 watts up the last climb, but I was cramping.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, so it was the cramping's fault.
Yeah.
Interesting.
As if cramping is just this mysterious thing that happens, irrelevant from everything else you've done, and that's the only thing that was holding you're back.
And would that be then thrown at you as said coach to be like, we need to work on my cramp resistance in the next sort of training session?
I just need to eat buckets of salt so I'll stop cramping, and suddenly then I'll be doing 50 watts more.
Right.
And the reason why it bugs me, it's no different than saying I was pushing really hard and I was going to do 300 watts up the last climb, but I only did 280.
Hmm.
That's what you did. You were fatigued and you did 280 watts. It would be nice to do 300 watts, but you couldn't. And cramping is the same. Cramping is just a manifestation of fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
So you couldn't do 300 watts up the climb. You were fatigued and could only do 280. And as a sign of fatigue, you also cramped. So to address that, you need to address the fatigue, not just the cramping.
Yes, not dumping yourself full of salt. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. So like isolating the exact issue that caused you to not achieve that goal is okay.
But it's confusing because there are things like I was bonking and I could only do 280, not 300. Well, that can be resolved if you eat more. That's a direct separate thing to fatigue. So there are... That's the main one that comes to the top of mind. So there are ones that are separate to fatigue, but cramping is just, is just a manifestation of your body is tired.
Yes.
Which all needs, it's all one package to improve. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Just simplify it and don't, yes. All right.
Yeah.
I've never cramped in my life. Can I just quickly say that?
Mm.
Never cramped.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm biased here.
Yeah.
But
you are lucky because there are people out there that will ride for an hour and they're cramping. It's a very big genetic component to it.
Best on the bike cramp. You ever seen a real good proper one?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I mean, this is legendary. The Ben Hill Nationals.
Oh yeah, yeah. I was going to say that.
Nationals cramp.
Yep.
Riding up the climb, pulls into the feed zone and just is holding his hamstring.
But what amazes me about that, I think he got back on.
Yep.
And kept going.
Yeah. So that's a good example. There's a guy that trained 30 hours a week and still cramps, and you'll never cramp.
No.
So it's interesting.
Yeah. It just so I'm fitter than Ben Hill. There you go. Yeah. Easy. Yeah. All right. Still one of the great ones. Still one of the great ones. That's kind of an interesting one because, like, do you then? Okay, that's a specific thing that happens on the bike. Do people? Is that like a narrative you get a lot? Like in the sense that a specific part of a race or a specific part of a ride is the thing that is holding them back?
No, that's the main. I mean, that's the biggest one.
Okay.
I mean, with everything else, people will just admit, I was tired and my legs were sore, or I was tired and I had a sore back.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. What else we got?
Other things. This is another one. It's on this. It's a similar theme actually. If you think about it, so the idea that I got dropped on the eighth attack up this circuit, up this climb. So I need to go and work on that very niche, specific part of the ride and basically replicate that in training to improve. And it's just, yeah, it's a very simplified way of thinking about training. Kind of just, yeah, bugs me a little. I mean, if I'm coaching someone, I always explain sort of the whole process behind it. But yeah, if you're getting dropped up a 10% gradient, it doesn't mean you need to go out and just ride 10% gradients 3 times a week. It's not, yeah, that's not how you improve.
It's a confusing one though, because like you're always told in this stuff that like specificity in training is a good thing. And then, you know, okay, let's say for example, there's a 1 minute effort or something somewhere in a crit, and that's the key determining factor every lap. Like, and then after the 30th 1 minute of these, the person gets dropped. And I've heard this as well. And then they'll come back and say, oh, I've just got to keep working on that 1 minute power.
It's that exact thing. There's a patience aspect to it where you've like, you do a race and you're stressed out. Like I got dropped on the fifth lap of that climb. So I need to go out and it's like, it's a logical, like that's a logical approach to have. So it's not like down, you know, talking down if someone thinks that. It's just, it's not logical from a physiological sense of the best way to approach that improvement in that. So
yeah, an interesting one. I'm going to touch a bit more on that bit later on in this chat. We haven't written this down. I've got a thought bubble on this.
Okay.
How about taking time off?
Yeah. Yep.
Now, this episode almost didn't happen, ladies and gentlemen. after I left here last week, I went home, tested positive for coronavirus, and it basically killed me for a week. So I haven't been on the bike in the full week since we've done the show. And it's like, you know me, right? That I don't do that by choice really ever. And yeah, I'm in this sort of phase. I'm pretty friggin' terrified of like, I actually don't know what I'm terrified of. And this is the thing, because like it's, when you're on this like rabbit wheel of just training and racing and doing all this stuff, you're on that rabbit wheel, and the second that you get off the rabbit wheel, you're like, oh, that's going to be it. The world's going to fall over. World didn't fall over, turned out.
Well, wait till you go for a ride again.
Well, that's it. And that's I'm totally terrified of that. And I'm sure you see that. Like, but it's this thing of like, okay, I got to a really good fitness, probably the fittest that I'd been in years and years and years, and I didn't want to give it up. I didn't want to give it up.
Yeah.
I was forced to give it up. But
yeah. I mean, that's different because you are sick and you're going to take a hit. It's probably going to be another week before you're doing any sort of proper riding at least. So that's not a nice drop that you're going to get. The thing that gets me is, but that's forced. There's nothing you can do.
COVID. Okay, fair enough.
It's the non-forced one that gets me, and it comes from probably some of these training videos that appear online where it's people think their fitness steps. So it's like I'm at a 250 watt FTP. And then I'm at 270, then I'm at 290.
Yeah.
And people get to that step and they're so scared of that feeling or seeing that number drop that they're then increasing their training to hold themselves there and then increasing more training to hold themselves there. Suddenly then it's been 6 months and then they're doing all this training and they're fully plateaued, fitness isn't going anywhere, and they're riding maybe just as much as they ever have to see no improvement because they think fitness steps, or fitness isn't steps, it's waves.
Yeah.
And letting yourself come, expecting fitness to drop when you've been at a peak, expecting it to drop, seeing your training load, your CTL point come down a bit, and then train up again 5-6 weeks, you'll bounce back up.
Yeah.
But if you don't let that drop happen, oh man, it's so common just to see that. Whereas I'm like, I feel like because I've gone through so many cycles now, I'm like, cool, I'm at a good level. Oh, I'm expecting to lose 15 watts in FTP. Like, I know I can get back up there. And when you sort of come to terms with it, it's much easier to.
I wonder if it's that though. It's the, I know that I'm going to get back up there. Mm-hmm. Whereas people, and I put myself in that basket, would suddenly start to think to themselves, maybe it's of a certain age, you're like, maybe I won't get back up. And then it becomes the thing of like, well, don't get off the.
Yeah, but you do. You're screwed either way.
Yeah.
If you don't back off, you'll keep training and you'll just plateaued anyway.
Yeah.
So like you're not going to see improvement.
Plateau's a nice place to be, yeah, though, Jesse. You know, you're up there, you're on the plateau, you're looking down on the plains.
Yeah.
You don't need to look any higher. It's fine. It's a beautiful place, the plateau.
Until you're doing like 20 hours of training a week just to be as fit as you were doing 10 a few months ago.
Yep.
Yeah. That's a big, big one. And if people could just have it, but it's just a confidence thing, right? Like I'm confident because I know I've done it so many times. I know the sort of the physiology behind it. I'm fine to let the fitness drop because I know it'll come back. Whereas if you're, a bit worried it might not, then you'll hold yourself up there.
You never know. you mentioned it there, YouTube.
Yep.
Yeah. You mentioned YouTube training stuff, which is, it's funny. I don't watch a huge amount of it, and I don't know why, because you look at the guys and girls creators' channels, that's like the most viewed stuff on most channels.
Mm-hmm.
Have you got a thought, like have you got a breakdown maybe on what's going on the platform?
Yeah. It is funny that we tend not to talk about it here very much at all, but it's biggest videos on a lot of other channels. I guess my thought on it is that there's already so much of the 10 ways to improve this, the real education stuff. It's out there, it's done. Dylan Johnson's pretty much covered every topic already and given you all the best research that's been done on each topic anyway. So that's already out there. How many people in reality are using that information to actually structure their own training? I don't think very many that do it confidently.
Yeah.
So my approach, and I've done some of it in the past, but my approach now, like at least on my own channel, because I do training related videos, is assuming that someone already has some sort of training plan, whether it's from a coach or an online thing, or they've built their own, and I'm trying to make videos more case study style of here's how I approach this training, pull out a little tidbit here and there. Other than that, maybe you just find it entertaining or motivational. And instead of trying to just ram information down.
So someone coming away from watching your video, is it entertaining or is it like, do you want them to go away and then be able to make their own training?
Someone's probably going to dig up an old video I did where I was giving advice, but to think someone's trying to piecemeal 10 of my videos together to try and build a training plan go for it if it's working. But it's not what my intention was to set up them. My intention is someone's already training and they just want to pick up a bit of advice here to get more out of a week or if it's just entertaining altogether. And I think that's what the training space on YouTube needs more of.
Yes.
Because the information's already out there. There's only, once Dylan Johnson makes a video on polarized training to improve your FTP, that's it. There's no other research anywhere else. The information's already explained.
So if I had one criticism of the NorCal 2 channel, and maybe we'll get EJ on to talk about it, is it kind of, I thought that's what it was going to be. I thought it was going to be this really specific, here's my journey training from, and that's really hard to do in a daily vlog format. I will 100% admit that. But that's kind of what I thought it would be great for is, here's my training program that I have started and here's the pure case study of me doing it. And I don't know if that's potentially where that went.
That's funny because I feel like the way Ethan's doing on NorCal 2 is a better way where it's just motivation and entertainment from what I can tell and not trying to basically put out this training with the intention that people are going to copy it.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Potentially, though, it is a bit light on actually explaining what he's doing.
Yes. I mean,
he does make an attempt to broadly explain it in a few videos, but you can't exactly follow him and be like, Ethan's in the build phase working on his 5-minute power.
Yeah.
But maybe he's intentionally not doing that because he doesn't want to. That's the problem as well, is you start doing that stuff and then you end up inadvertently giving advice.
And it's also maybe not that interesting. Like, have you noticed that, like, most like, of those style of videos just aren't that well watched? Like, today I'm going out and doing 5x5. here we go. I'm on the hill doing them. Oh, that first one was good. Yeah. Like,
it doesn't work.
Gives a shit.
Yeah. I've tried to do a few of those. Firstly, they're a pain in the ass because the session you're doing when you're trying to film that video sucks. It's already, who wants to go out and do 5x5 at 110%? No one. Who wants to go out and do that and film it? Fucking dreaming.
I spotted one of yours the other day. Actually, it was the one you were doing the thumper ones on the VO2. It was actually really good. You had like the camera on the side and you were like riding past it. And I was like, when did he film that? I didn't know there was anyone else out there. But yeah, but like no one watched it.
No one watched it. But it works in the fitness industry.
Yes.
What's it? Bradley Martin doing a chest workout.
Yep.
2 million views.
Yep.
Jesse Coyle doing the 5x5. 2,000 views. Like 10 thumbs up.
Yeah.
I just, for some reason, it doesn't click.
No.
It's why you don't see it. Yeah. But that's probably why everyone ends up just going more down the tips route.
Yeah.
Because at least it gets views.
Yeah, exactly. Only other thing I was going to say is so the case study type stuff, for my own personal experience, I don't do any of the training stuff, but that creatine thing was kind of similar in the sense that was my experience using creatine, and it was kind of really hard to then not do if you're in this particular circumstance, you should do this. And like, it's really, really hard to not say. Do you know what I mean? And I'd imagine in the training space, it's quite hard to not say as well, because if something worked for you, like if this training program worked for you, or fasted riding, whatever the bullshit was, worked for you, it's probably really hard to take your experience out of it and not go down the, give it a go, because the science says.
It's really, that's a line. Now I reckon people bullshit their way through that, where they come out and say, this is my experience doing this.
Yep, that's the
line.
But
that's just to masquerade them wanting to give advice. So it's hidden because maybe they don't feel qualified, or they're not qualified to. So it's under this umbrella of, here's what I did, don't follow it. And then, halfway through the video, they're just handing out advice. Yep. Very common. I like to think that, if you're watching a video, it's pretty clear. Is this someone's experience, or are they giving advice? You know that before they go in. And I think, again, I'll keep bringing up Cam Nichols. It's because he's one of the biggest channels in the cycling space. He started to really – it's interesting seeing him pivot around how he's dealing with that. So now when he does nutrition stuff, he gets Steph, the dietitian, on. So if he's giving advice, it's not actually from him. It's from her, which is good. And then if he's doing his own, he's done a few recent ones with his own nutrition experience, it's purely, here's what I ate on this ride and it worked for me. And cut there. So he's probably dealing with it best. The problem with the training videos is, because nutrition videos, cycling ride, always do well on YouTube, but nutrition is relatively simple. Like, you can watch a 10-minute video and get a pretty good idea of what you should do. Whereas a 10-minute training related video is just an absolute rabbit warren that you're not going to be able to really apply much.
Yes.
It's too complex.
Yes. Like, I look at like a little bit like the bike fit thing. It's a bit sort of, if you start watching these bike fit videos to get the perfect bike fit, you're already going to start, you're going to end up going to a professional bike fitter. That's where your journey ends. I promise you. Because you're never going to feel right doing the bike fit on YouTube.
And no, I disagree. I disagree, right? If you're random off the street getting into a road bike and you have no idea how anyone looks.
Yes.
Yeah, a bike fit video you watch, you'll get close. Okay. If you're Joe Blow off the street and you watch a 10-minute training video on YouTube, you are potentially just training worse. Like, what are you going to learn that's actually applicable? You'll just...
No,
probably.
I think there's the pure generic training video of, here's what a zone is, that stuff you will still learn. You will still, something will absorb, whether you won't put that into practice. No, I completely agree with that. But like, that's a bit like the bike fit thing.
But
you would have got in the zone.
But I don't think if you watch a 10-minute training video, your training is not, you're not going to be able to pull anything from that you wouldn't from just riding your bike more. But if you, a 10-minute bike fit video, you're going to be way better than just randomly getting on and
not every training video is a created equal, Jesse. Okay. They're not. And like I was watching that, like how to build a training plan from GCN, right? And it starts with write down the holidays you have. Like right. There is enough information in there that basic said person can sort of start thinking about what a training plan is.
If I just pulled someone off the street and had 5 minutes to give them training advice that wasn't nutrition related, because the person you probably say is make sure you fuel your that's not training advice, that's nutrition advice. What would I tell them that would help them? Ride more often and have recovery days and do some easier rides and some harder rides? Is that like, I guess they probably wouldn't know to do. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yep.
Potentially. I would go the route of if they've got a power meter or something that this is the spectrum of zones you might have, maybe.
Is that, he's going into zones in 5 minutes. Oh, sheesh.
I think you might as well. There's no point talking about, maybe not. Yeah. I don't know.
Another channel that's hitting some of the training related things is Tristan Cardew. So Tristan Take Video on YouTube, Tristan Take Photo on Instagram. I was teammates with him for a short period back in about 2017 because he lived in Sydney.
Beat me in the Sydney Uni Club Championships back in the day.
That was always a big one.
A grudge is somewhere to park a car. But anyway.
What?
If you know that joke, comment down below.
All right, Dad. Yeah. So he's this video that popped up, 4 key training sessions to skyrocket your cycling performance. And very entertaining video, but this is the sort of one where I don't understand who's this targeted for. Like, yeah, what's right. this achieving? Okay, so let me explain. He's got John Wakefield on, who is a very experienced world tour coach. He's worked for UAE, works for Bora. I mean, the knowledge and experience that he would have is amazing. So great guest. But he's got him on and essentially done like an educational related video in terms of here's a way that you can structure a few training blocks and some sessions you can do. And it hasn't really hit. It didn't hit home for me. So who's going to be able to actually apply any of this information?
Yeah.
Not that many people. I mean, most of the people that would be watching this video are going to be on some type of training plan anyway. So I'm struggling to see how they apply this. I'd be more interested to see like, if we look at this, right? Some of the section in this video, low cadence intervals. Now the science on low cadence intervals is not very well in cycling. There's not that much on it. So I'd be interested to like, speak to John about how he uses low cadence intervals with his pro cyclists and how they approach that. Super interesting. Or race-specific intervals. Use his experience with the pros. How do pros approach the preseason to get ready for the race season? And even Tristan on his own is racing at a high level in Spain. So instead of doing more of the educational stuff, just be like, here's how I approach my preseason in Spain.
I think that for me would be the angle. Like Tristan's own take on these sessions, what's working for him, what's not working for him. Like I've paused at the moment this session that he's put up there, the low cadence session. Like I've been training for a while and most of that's gobbledygook to me. Like I feel like someone coming away from that's not going to really be able to do anything with that information. Whereas if we got, and maybe you'll follow this up, hopefully he does, with his own stuff. If that was put into Tristan's own training and we were able to see that, I think that's where the real goals would be kicked in that space for mm-hmm. sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like just great to see Newton meters and torque back in the vocabulary. But yeah, I know what you mean. So there we go, a bit of training chat. That's a good to hear. We did well, Jesse. But let us know down below, guys. So what do you want from cycling training content on YouTube? Is it just pure general advice? Is it just entertainment? Is it voyeurism? Is it you just want to see what other people are doing and nitpick, or not nitpick, but just sort of take little bits out of it yourselves? Let us know, because I think it's kind of a fascinating area.
Are we going back to bike chat, Oompa Loompa?
Get Oompa on here. Next guest.
So we did say we weren't going to talk about bikes, but you know why we're not talking about it this week? Someone's done it better than us.
Yeah, we're done.
We're done.
We're done.
So we're out. The Oompa Loompa cycling show.
My new look. I need new. I need a custom mask.
Custom mask. This is it's everything that we sort of did, but just dialed up to 100. So what he does is he gets a guest on, sits down with the bike, and they just spend an hour discussing why they spec'd every single individual part of the bike.
It's mind-blowing on every aspect, Jesse Coyle. The people coming on, incredible. Absolutely incredible. The bikes that these people are bringing on, the stories behind these bikes. Okay, so I think like the first question we ever had on this channel was like, is it performance? Is it froth?
Yep.
That these people are buying these high-end bikes. What is it about?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's now been answered for me. Like it's complete froth for me.
What?
Yeah.
No, it's not.
It's complete froth.
Complete performance. Oh, it depends what one you watch.
Okay.
Right. So so one I watched last night, this rider here, Merida Reacto 5000.
Yep.
With the Ascent Polaris
69. Oh, now he was a performance man.
Yes. Mm. So this is why it's interesting because this is not, I like it because this is not why I am into cycling.
No.
So this is just like an amazing little peek through the curtains at like what other people get out of the sport. So this chap here, he's got the Merida Reacto aero bottle on the down tube.
No laughing.
And he's got a custom printed headset cap for the Merida so that he can internally run the cables all the way through the stem down through the head tube, which the Merida doesn't stock come with. So he's ordered this part. It's like, what?
Yeah.
Yep. And this isn't a professional dude. It's just he's just an
enthusiast.
Pure enthusiast.
So I refer you to my friend who was in the Seeker Exceed video.
Mm-hmm.
This bloke blew my mind. So he's made the value conscious decision of getting the Seeker. At least that's what he's sort of said, but he basically got it because it looks like a Factor Austro van. All good. No happy days there. But like all the other little steps that he's made. So he removed the decals on his zip wheels and then restuck on the bright ones because he wanted the bright decals on there. Spent hours and hours putting them on, aligning them up, getting them all on there. Like that's not a performance thing. That's a pure looks thing. I absolutely love it. And then he's got the custom shoes to match the bike because that was the same colorway as the bike. I just think everything about this is, like you said, it's like this. We're viewing another world here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why did you put the rotor crank set on? Oh, it just looks cooler. Like, I just love it. Absolutely love it. Everything about it.
Some of them are big on performance, and then the Oompa Loompa, I don't know his name, the Oompa Loompa guy asks them, so how much are you training? And, 200 kilometers a week. Whoa, big. Like, these guys don't ride that much. Let's not lie. Well, what's your FTP? 200. Whoa. It's like, it's just, I don't know, not to like, again, to use a Joe phrase, I don't want to gatekeep, but it's funny when these blokes are obsessed with performance. It's like the hobby part of it is, I just want the fastest bike, and I'm on forums and this and that and this and that. I love it. I absolutely love these videos.
Oompa Loompa himself, obviously, what a character. Can I just say this? There's so much about everything Oompa Loompa is running here that just blows my mind. Obviously.
Looking at the setup.
I've got
aren't
the
you?
Setup here. Yeah. Can I talk about the setup?
Yeah, go. Let's
the
go.
Setup blows my mind. So Oompa has managed to. So the whole production, if any of you haven't seen this, obviously link them below, but it's one camera pointing at two guys sitting on tiny chairs, mostly, I've noticed, down sort of on a street level thing, and the shot is just them and the bike behind them. And yet, down in front of him, he's got like a multi-cam monitor. So looks like he's there sort of about to live switch between all these different cameras and everything that he's got going on. There's no other cameras. It's just the one camera. I don't know what else he's looking at. But then we've got the over-ear microphone for the lapels. I'm like, you're just talking to the dude there. Like, it's not a virtual call here. I don't know why we need over-ear anything. And what else have we got? We've got the mask. It's all perfect for me.
He does a shitload of B-roll though.
Afterwards, yes.
Like B-roll all going the very way high. Through the video.
Yep.
He's talking about what bolt you have in your rear derailleur hanger, and he shows B-roll of it. So the editing is really is really good. But he's moved into a studio now. I've seen the more recent ones.
Oh, yes.
So they're in the studio, and bike's up on the wall. I mean, it is, looks better than us now, not going to lie.
It's not hard.
Looks pretty good setup. But yeah, it's like if you like the bike chat that we've done, go and look at the some of these Oompa Loompa ones, because you get that for an hour. I honestly watched an hour of this last night. I don't know.
And like a lot of these, when you sit and you watch these bike things, people talking through them, the answers are normally so stereotypical, or people are almost afraid to actually say the real reason they got things. Mm-hmm. These guys have no fear, and that's what I love.
Is that like a Asian culture thing, or
maybe
just the crowds he's in? They're really honest.
You know, if we sat down and were as honest as these guys and were like, no, I got the rotor one because it looked cooler, or, you know, no, I got the 3D thing because I wanted it to, like, people would be like, just go ride your bike, you loser.
Mm.
Like, get over it. Whereas these guys are like, yeah, cool, I bought the more expensive one and it looks cooler, so stuff you.
And it's also interesting because it's not about being right or wrong. Well, when we discuss something, that's the problem we do. We discuss something and we're like, a magazine said this, oh, they're wrong because of that. So we're kind of pointing fingers. Whereas this is he's just asking the guest, why did you buy that?
Mm.
And they just explain it. And it's not about him pushing back on it or being right or wrong. It's just an insight into why someone loves the way they've spec'd their bike. It's really good.
Here's a question. Would the YouTube community view us or them as more elitist?
I think for that reason, they'd say we're more elitist.
I think you're right.
Because his is more of just a live and let live.
Yes.
I'm just interested in why you did this. Whereas we're actually, you know, giving opinions on that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oompa's not going back to the guest and saying, well, that was a stupid choice. You shouldn't have got those. You should have got those because reason X and Y that I have, which is basically what we do.
Yes.
And I think people take that as elitism, but it's just us having an opinion and taking the piss out of each other most of the time. Yeah. No, Rady Studio setup. Actually, just having a look at that now.
Yeah.
Oompa Loompa Cycling. Getting on it.
There's a lot of them. Yeah, I've got to go back and have a look through. I'd love to do a reaction video watching one of these. Because this guy with the Merida, he was riding other bikes. He's like, oh, the other ones weren't stiff enough. I'm like, how many watts are you doing? Like, I think maybe he likes the harsher ride, because the harsher ride's perceived as being stiffer.
Hmm.
I could spend so long just like picking through these videos. It's so.
So go check Oompa Loompa out. If there are any other similar YouTubers out there, we need to go and check out. Quick fire round.
All right, let's
quick
go.
Fire round. First up, controversial comment. I feel that the Ultegra Di2 12 speed crank set looks much nicer than the Durace one.
Why?
Okay, so I think what it is. That matte finish, it's more of a blocky looking device or component from a distance, and it kind of looks a bit more robust. Mm. Whereas that pure shiny finish on the Durace one, it normally, like most bikes, aren't that shiny. And so it just turns into this like real kitschy looking like mirror piece instead of the, I don't know, like utilitarian grey nice chunk of the Ultegra one. That's my take.
I agree, actually. Mm. Just brief times I've seen the Ultegra crank set, I'm like, oh, that looks cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Definitely agree.
Rate that. There you go. There's my quick fire.
I got one. Flared drop handlebars. This is what people brought up on the other week. We were talking about how bikes are spec'd with too wide a handlebars. People are saying, well, the Trek ones flared out a lot in the drops. Well, I ride a lot in the drops. Who cares if it's 39 on the hoods and 42 on the drops? If I'm racing, I'm in the drops. I want it to be narrow in the drops. Why are handlebars flared? I think one of the reasons is so that when you're sprinting, you don't hit your wrists on the rounded part of the
niche.
Okay. Thing. Well, why else would they flare them? Well, I spend almost half or if not more of a crit in the drops. Why would I want it to be less aero in the drops? I don't understand flared handlebars.
But see, I've never understood why those gravel handlebars do the even more like exaggerated flare out, because anytime you're riding gravel and you're descending on gravel, you're always descending on the tops or on the hoods. You're not descending on the drops.
Are you though? Because yeah, wouldn't you be mostly descending? Isn't the flare drops because it gives you more control in the drops if you're descending in the drops?
Normally you're trying to get your weight back when you're descending on gravel as opposed to over the front wheel. And then like, then the next thing is I'm on a long flat gravel section. Why do I want to be driving this?
I don't know.
Maybe
is it to fit a bar bag?
Maybe it's bar bags. Maybe it is a bag. That's true. Yeah.
I just, the flare thing, why would I want to be...
Flare in. Let's flare in.
You're going to the drops to get more aero. Yeah. Why go into the drops, get lower, and then your elbows are out?
Oh. I want to flare in. Yep. There's a design. Get that in. Get that happening. Quick fire round. Okay, so a little bit of nutrition stuff for you. If you're just going to go out and do a two-hour easy endurance ride, what food are you taking with you?
It's 2 hour endurance, one banana, and maybe 60 grams of sugar water.
Okay.
That's it.
All right. Fair enough. 2 hours with efforts.
Skip the banana and bump up to, if it's just 2 hours with efforts, maybe 80 to 100 grams of sugar water.
Okay.
Yep.
80 to 100 grams, so you're going to go through that. Okay. Yeah.
Because the first half hour, it doesn't really count, so you sort of, because you, I would always have a pre-ride snack before.
Yeah.
So you're kind of getting through the first 30, 45 minutes fine, and then hit the 80 grams for the last hour and a half.
Right. The reason I brought this up is because that's seemingly what most sort of training sessions are for people, are kind of in that window a lot of the time, like that sort of 2 hour sort of thing. And I find this really difficult, especially with like the short, intense stuff, is I'm like that. I'll have a pre something. But then when I'm in the actual like flow of doing whatever the efforts are, it's quite difficult to actually be taking food on. Mm-hmm. And then you get to the end of the session, you're like, oh shit, I haven't fueled this. And all of a sudden I then try and ingest the food that I came out. And I was a bit like, did I just miss the window here? that happens to me all the time.
Is that because you're not using your fluids for your carbs? Yeah. I mean, that happens. How many times have we gone to a race and someone's like, started to bonk a little, hit the wall a little bit because I couldn't hit my nutrition plan. It's because they had like 6 Clif bars and 3 bananas. Like, of course you were never going to, that was never going to happen. And the same happens with a 2 hour.
Yeah.
If you're doing efforts and you got a bag of lollies, you don't have time to chomp through them. So you're better off using the fluids. But the other thing there is if it's just, let's say, hour to an hour and a half session, if you have a pre-ride meal and decently regularly replenished glycogen because you eat carbohydrates throughout the day and the day before, you're not going to be depleted on that ride. So I think there's potentially crossed wires there in terms of the fatigue you're feeling after the session and maybe some hunger isn't because you've like glycogen depleted in the session. It's probably just a natural fatigue from the session.
Yep.
You can't, eating 200 grams of carbs during that ride isn't going to make you any less tired. No, necessarily.
But is my only question, okay, well, that's interesting because like I'm really conscious of that thing that trying to stay on top of the fueling during the ride because I kind of want the maximum gains from especially those intense sessions, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not doing myself too bad a disservice by not hitting those nutrition marks in those intense sessions as long as I'm keeping myself relatively fueled outside of that is kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, if it's under about an hour and a half.
Yeah, okay.
Because you can't, you're just not going to be able to burn through that much glycogen that's going to cause an issue.
Yeah.
But yeah, if it's 2.5, 3 hours, then it becomes more important, the in-ride fueling.
I got one more for you, actually, which I was going to mention. I reached out to Magine.
Yep.
So actually on the back of Joe's video, and I was like, you know what, I'd really like to test one of your power meters. So that actually not their power meter, their power meter and their crank. They've got the whole power meter and crank and everything, right? And there was a little to and fro going about it, and we agreed on the one to do. And then they sent me a contract, right? I'm going to pull this up.
Wow.
Came back with, generally speaking, The cooperation period is 3 months. I think I'm allowed to read this. Anyway, we'll see. We want you to make the video within 1 month after receiving the product. After the video then needs to be sent to us and checked to confirm before releasing it officially. We will then confirm and you can send the video live.
Is this a paid contract?
No, it's not paid.
Right.
This was what I was going to get this.
You have to sign this for them just to send you a power meter.
Send a power meter.
What the hell? Why would you bother?
That's why I literally wrote back and said, I think you've totally missed what I was asking about here. I basically said that it's not. What did I say? Hang on, let me find what I've sort of said. There's no way I'd be making a video within a month, nor would I be sending you the video for you to verify whether it was acceptable. Maybe we should put this on the back burner. I just kind of thought that was really interesting on the back of what Joe said, because remember how he said, like, a lot of these companies are used to, that's the way they work. I'm not getting paid for that, but it's meant to be this, oh, yeah, we'll send you it and we'll okay it before it gets sent live. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Some of these brands are delusional.
Yeah.
What do they think you're getting out of this?
Oh, that was the other part.
Because you could just go and buy it. It's not that expensive. Making a video for them. All there is providing is a power meter that costs them hardly anything, and they're expecting you to bend over backwards for them?
That was the other part. So they kind of wanted, what kind of review are you going to do? I was like, well, I'm not going to do a review. Like, Shane Miller and DC Rainmaker can go and do that. But what I said I would do is that I would run it with my Asioma pedals, and we'll get a bit of a comparison, but not sort of, you know, hours upon hours of data. And they were like, oh, no, we'd prefer you didn't use the Asioma pedals as part of the comparison. I'm like, okay. Right. So what do you want me to do? Just ride around on it and go, it's brilliant. Look at the power. I'm so powerful. I don't know.
This is so okay. Yeah. So who's done videos? Who's done a McGean? So there's two Shane Miller ones. So if I type McGean power meter, two Shane Millers. Durian Rider has done one.
I've had a little bit to do with them in the past. They contacted me about the tail light thing, and
they do the radar.
Yeah, and it was the same. I didn't get that far down the route because I just went back and went, well, like, DC Rainmaker's done one on this. Like, what's anyone to learn from Chris Miller using this? Because I'd use it happily and, you know, post about it on Instagram and stuff, but I'm not going to.
Why did you want it? Sorry? Oh, you're down the power meter.
I'm down the power meter rabbit hole. That's
just put your Asiomas back on, your Shimano crank that shifts well, and just be done with it. You're just a glutton for punishment.
Glutton for punishment, yeah. I don't know. I just thought that was interesting.
Okay, yeah. Sorry, McGee.
So, yeah,
just dragged you through.
Potentially.
Was that
no
net
review.
Positive? Or, I mean, I guess that's not negative, is it? That was just a.
Yeah, it's just a little.
They can do what they want.
Yeah, that's fine. Yep. Got no issues.
Were they interested in sending you the radar?
Yeah.
Because I want to use the radar. Can you get one from them so I can use it?
Will you happily sign the contract that says it's the best radar ever? No, but I think it's a cool company. That's actually why I reached out, because it was on the back of Joe's video, and they were doing like bike computers, tail lights, crank sets. That was one of those companies that I was a bit like, holy shit, these guys are like the new... I don't know, FSA and Wahoo combined. So
no one's ever going to partner with us because they're just going to shitbag us on the show the next week.
Last but not least, Jesse. So the video with Joe.
Yes.
Mind blowing. No, okay. So here's the question. Did you come away from watching and being in that chat with more questions about the industry or... less questions? Like, did you feel like things got answered, or are you coming away from that going, but what about, like, you know?
I feel way more informed, but I do have a lot more questions. Yeah. I'm now a Dunning-Kruger for Chinese bike parts because the only problem is the stuff that I would want more information on is going to push the envelope in terms of what he's allowed to say.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, oh, give us the details on how they're adjusting the frames for the pros and what other brands do it. And just stuff that I feel would feel really awkward pushing for more answers on. But there's a lot of stuff like that. Right? I want more detail. I want the real nitty gritty of it all.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, nothing in that chat went, oh my God, because it all felt like information that I'd known, but it's a bit like that. It's the surface has now been scratched. It's that next level of detail, like the bikes that look like a Canyonero road. Why does it look that close? Is it literally the mold with, is Jeff making that one there and you're making this one here and you're making the Seiko and I'm making the Canyonero road on the same day with the same layups? It's just the paint, like, is it like that?
Mm-hmm.
Right in there. That's sort of the bit that gets me at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And to think like that Specialized whole selling point is just the fact that they can do larger runs and therefore people can work on their bikes for longer at a time. Man.
Mm.
Yeah. I just want so much more.
And same thing, it's similar on the lines of when a brand is designing a bike, 90% of the consideration is, well, what does the factory actually have capacity to do at scale? Not what's best or what's fastest. There's so many. Yeah. I didn't have appreciation for the amount of constraints that they're working with.
Yeah. So I knew all the stuff about the mold designers, the Chinese mold designers essentially like licensing the molds to the different companies. I knew all that stuff, but I suppose I hadn't taken it to that next level to see how that actually plays out physically in the fact, because I always under this illusion that the people, and this is maybe biased, but the people making it, people being there doing it, the specialized people were more skilled at it than the insert other brand here. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think that myth was busted for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Anyway, we will definitely get Joe back on. Guys, thank you so much for watching this week. Again, please do share this show on to anyone and everyone that you think might be interested. It makes a massive, massive difference for us. Jesse, thanks for your time.
Thanks.
Chat to you all soon.